Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Joining me today from our team of great reporters is Deb Pace. Welcome back to the podcast, Deb.
Thank you, Paul. Great to be back.
And the title for this week's podcast is Down the Drain: Catastrophic Issues Affecting Municipal Water Credits. And we're specifically talking about drought issues. As consumers, drought can wreak havoc on water supply and water quality. And we'll focus on the Southwest, specifically Texas, Arizona, and Nevada. On the consumer side, we have options: running out to the store and picking up a few gallons of water, or for some, ordering water service to make sure supply is steady. But from a municipal water agency perspective, drought can cause operational impacts to water utilities, including the loss of water supply and poor water quality. The solutions are neither fast nor easy, and many times they're either elusive or can take several years and several millions or billions of dollars to implement. So, Deb, you've been covering water issues for a while and become quite familiar with, I'll call, the ebbs and flows of weather patterns and water issues impacting states across the country. So let's focus on Texas, where drought has been a major issue for a while. What are you seeing in the municipal sector right now?
Paul, it's a major topic that both state legislators and municipal water agencies have been facing head on. The Texas Water Development Board recently released a water report. It showed 31% of Texas is under drought conditions, and nearly 40% of the state is vulnerable to drought soon. Some smaller water agencies and municipalities have either lost the ability to pump water to customers or are at risk of doing so within a day or just days. But the unique thing about Texas is that the Texas Water Development Board is the issuer for a lot of smaller municipalities' debt, including bonds and low-interest loans. And it's going to be busy issuing even more in the future. So for those who don't know, the board leads the water efforts in the state. Its main responsibilities are threefold: collecting and disseminating water-related data, assisting with regional water supply and flood planning that contributes to preparing the state water plan and state flood plan, and administering cost-effective financial programs for constructing water supply, wastewater treatment, flood control, and agricultural water conservation projects. The state legislature in the most recent session reached an agreement to allocate $1 billion toward addressing the state's water challenges. In addition to the $1 billion investment, lawmakers earmarked $125 million to match federal funding for water infrastructure that will unlock even more federal funding. Recent estimates put the actual cost of addressing the state's water issues at around $500 billion, so this new legislation barely scrapes the surface of the state's needs. The recent legislation emphasizes aquifer storage and creates the new Water Supply for Texas Fund. It prioritizes desalination, produced water, and aquifer storage projects that will address aging water infrastructure. It's focused on smaller rural communities that have historically lacked adequate financial support. Some of that funding will go toward projects like the one by the cities of Cedar Park, Leander, and Round Rock in a regional partnership called the Brushy Creek Regional Utility Authority. The three cities are some of the fastest growing areas in Central Texas, so the authority is building a deep water intake and tunnel system that will take water from Lake Travis to a new pump station. The project will draw water from the lowest possible point of the lake to ensure distribution in case of a drought. It's funded in part through a low-interest loan that totals $194 million, and it's from the State Water Implementation Fund for Texas, administered by the Texas Water Development Board. The Brushy Creek Authority, by the way, had $159 million in outstanding bond debt, according to its latest financial filing.
So these smaller agencies certainly need help with some big projects. But when I think of Texas, I definitely think big. So what are the larger water agencies doing to mitigate drought issues?
Actually, Paul, they're looking for a piece of that same funding pie that legislators earmarked for the smaller utilities. For instance, the San Antonio Water System recently successfully lobbied to have larger utilities included in the $1 billion Texas Water Development Board funding package I just mentioned. While it was approved by legislators, it still faces a November referendum. One of the goals of the legislation is to ensure water security in the state with a directive to provide 7 million new acre feet of water supply to the state by 2033. And San Antonio and other water utilities worked to ensure the bill allowed flexibility in fund allocation to include the larger systems, which, in the case of San Antonio's, it has the largest aquifer storage and recovery system in the country.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what major infrastructure projects come out of that funding if voters approve moving forward in November. But let's turn our attention to Arizona. What's the latest there?
Arizona officials stopped approving new development in the city of Phoenix over water concerns. So, as one of the Colorado River Basin states that's been severely impacted by the mega drought, it's been throwing a lot of resources at finding or creating new sources of clean water. The city, which had $1 billion in junior lien water revenue bonds outstanding, has reportedly been planning to open a multi-billion dollar purification facility to recycle wastewater into drinking water by the end of the decade. Whether or not you can stomach that, the city's water agency, the Phoenix Water Services Department, has a $1.6 billion five-year capital program that currently has 200 active projects and a $631 million price tag, which doesn't include the purification project that is still very early in the planning process. Interestingly, most of the water services capital plan budget, $514 million of it, is allocated to repairing aging pipes or building new pipelines.
There's certainly plenty of dollar signs behind these projects. And when you add in another $50 billion that the bipartisan infrastructure law delivers to the Environmental Protection Agency to improve drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater infrastructure projects, it almost seems as there are more money than some of the agencies can propose projects for.
That's right, Paul. Though they are sure trying to capitalize on the momentum. For example, in December, Arizona state officials voted to advance a $5.5 billion plan to build a water desalination plant in Mexico, as well as a 200-mile pipeline and associated infrastructure as part of a state effort to address its drought-driven water uncertainty. But as you can imagine, there's been a lot of controversy around the plan and method of implementation.
Well, anytime you have a cross-border project, it elevates the complexity and potential for public opposition and lacking public agency approval. Not to mention, desalination itself has been controversial because of the amount of power it generates and concerns over all the leftover brine. And that's the leftover salt removed from the water that gets pumped back into the ocean, sinks to the floor, and wreaks havoc on ecosystems by reducing oxygen levels and massively increasing salt content. Environmental issues are a whole other topic that could probably take up another podcast.
Absolutely, Paul. We can work on that one soon. But one thing to mention in Arizona is that, like Texas, it also has a state agency, the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority, or WIFA. That's a state finance agency and a type of bond bank that issues bonds and provides low-interest loans for construction and improvement of drinking water systems, wastewater treatment, and water reclamation systems. The WIFA board authorizes grants and issues bonds to support public water infrastructure projects. Just last year, it became authorized to enter public-private partnerships and water supply development projects to improve current and long-term water supplies, achieve a comprehensive water strategy to conserve water, improve the efficiency and reuse of existing water resources, and augment existing water resources with new renewable water supplies. In 2022, WIFA executed $159 million in drinking water and clean water loans for infrastructure projects. And in fact, the state just committed $1 billion in funding over 3 years to help boost the state's water supply through alternative water projects. They include desalination and reuse projects like we just mentioned.
Arizona sure is busy with water projects, and a major focus will be on finding new sources of drinking water while mitigating drought conditions if the mega drought continues. Now, I recall Nevada also made some headlines on mitigation measures. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, Paul. As another Colorado River Basin state, it's subject to limits on water it can draw from the river, just like Arizona, California, and several other states. Recently, a state law was signed that allows the Southern Nevada Water Authority to limit residential water use during a declared federal emergency water shortage through flow-limiting devices that would limit each household to a half-acre foot of water per year. It would only be during a federal water shortage emergency, but it's one of several measures the agency is taking to try to address the situation.
And there's also been a focus on pipelines for water supply in Nevada, correct?
Yes. In one of the most recent notable ones, Southern Nevada Water Authority collaborated with North Las Vegas on a $250 million water and sewer infrastructure project for the Apex Industrial Park. North Las Vegas has already invested $63 million in a public-private partnership for the infrastructure for the massive manufacturing hub that's under development. And the Water Authority approved more than $70 million to boost pipelines at the site. So you have joint agencies, a P3, and industrial development. As with other projects, though, that one has been riddled with permitting delays, among other things.
So you mentioned North Las Vegas, which obviously makes me think of Las Vegas and the fact that I don't think Las Vegas is known for having water, but there's a way of getting water by building pipelines. So what's going on in Vegas?
Sure, Paul. I mean, when you build a city in the middle of the desert, Las Vegas Valley Water District, which had $2.9 billion in bonds outstanding as of March 2nd, at its June meeting, the board approved issuing $230 million in Series 2023A General Obligation Limited Tax Water Bonds to finance water projects for the district. So, according to information on its website, the district has four new facilities planned for construction, mostly water storage reservoirs, along with four pumping stations. So, in addition to the pipelines in place and under construction to ensure water reliability, these reservoirs could also be used to reduce vulnerability to service disruptions in the case of emergency water outages like we've seen in Texas. And in addition to adding new infrastructure, the Water District this year began including excess use fees in customer bills to try to cut back on water usage. However, there's been a lot of public outcry over the fee that has more than doubled many customers' water bills.
Just like the drought situation, it sounds like many of these situations are still evolving and projects are progressing, though some are a little closer to approval or completion stages than others. We'll certainly keep an eye on them and keep you all updated as they progress. Thanks, Deb, for joining us on the podcast. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Tune in next Thursday for the latest drop of the Muni Lowdown. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of ION Analytics or any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes and should not be considered as professional advice.